This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR with Louise Taffer and Josh Parrish. And we're going to cross to our journo now. Vince Rugari joins us. Vince, thank you so much for coming on Evenings on FNR.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. A little bit cold in Melbourne, but not too bad. I was reading one of your articles yesterday about the fact that the A-League expansion teams will now be given a bigger salary cap. Western United and Macarthur Southwest Sydney are set to have an initial salary of, what, 3.6 mil. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, 3.6 mil to 3.2 million is my understanding. It's not confirmed yet. It's part of the ongoing negotiations for the new CBA for next season only. From all reports from the people I've been speaking to, the thought behind it is that it would apply for the first two seasons for each new club. Although, then again, you do have the PFA who are keen to get rid of the salary cap as soon as possible. So it's a bit dicey in terms of how long for, but I can't see it being around this salary cap boost for the new clubs more than their first two seasons. And I don't mind it, to be honest. In the article, I've mentioned that it's partly to give them a leg up to make sure that they're successful from the outset, which is important, I think, but also partly to level the playing field because these new clubs can't offer loyalty payments because those apply for players who have been at your club for a certain amount of time and they're brand new. So they can't offer around $200,000, although my understanding is the cap may be removed entirely on loyalty payments. So if they were to come and play by the same rules that already exist, they'd actually be behind the eight ball rather than on a level playing field. This sort of gives them a little bit of a nudge, but not an extraordinary one, I wouldn't have thought. And I think it's in everyone's best interest that these teams are good from the outset. Otherwise, the consequences for the league would not be very good.
And Vince, this isn't the first time that FFA has actually given an expansion team a leg up. I mean, I do remember Western Sydney were, I think, given an extra a foreign spot, so that they could sign Shinji Ono for their first season.
Yeah, they were actually given two extra foreigner spots. They never exceeded six marquees at any given time. The time that it was introduced allowed them to basically make a play for Shinji Ono. It was an advantage for the Wanderers, but let's face it, the league was the beneficiary. He was a fantastic player, a great ambassador for the competition, built the profile of the club and the league. I've just finished another piece for tomorrow, actually, as well, having a little bit of a closer look at KSK Honda's impact on the A-League. And in retrospect, that rule change that allowed Shinji Ono to come to the A-League was a masterstroke because it meant that the Wanderers weren't, overshadowed, so to speak, in their first season by a Sydney FC team that had Del Piero on deck. So anything that ensures expansion teams are successful from as quickly as possible and brings high-profile players to our league, in my opinion, with where the league's currently at, is a good thing.
I have to agree there, Vince. And how do you think the Western United squad is shaping up so far? They announced three new signings this week, Delianov, Scott McDonald and Ersin Ghulam.
Really well, actually. I'm sort of surprised that none of the Melbourne teams made a play for Ersin Ghulam. He only left Adelaide because he wanted to return to Melbourne for family reasons. Obviously, hasn't been doing much in terms of football since then. What was it, State League 1, State League 2?
Yeah, State League 1.
Something like that. It's crazy, but it's not like he was a terrible player by any means in the A-League. And I don't know if you guys have seen him play this season. I certainly haven't, but you'd like to think Western United have done their homework and have potentially, snared a real leader for their defensive part of the field on the cheap there. So that's a really good signing. So is Delianov, I think, who is by all reports that the best young goalkeeper going around in Australia. The squad's shaping up really well, I think. What they want, though, I think is some pretty big fish out of the next sort of five or six names that they signed. They've got three visa spots left, one marquee spot left. You'd like to think that they'll go big for that, bring some highly credentialed foreign players in to complement Kone. And, well, I say that they've got three visa spots left, assuming that Philip Curto is their first choice goalkeeper, which seems to be on par with Mark Rudin to Western United, one of the worst kept secrets in the game. We get a few of those over the journey, don't we? But no one keeps a secret like Australian soccer. So, yeah, it's shaping up really well, but the next signings are critical, and I'll be very interested to see what direction they take with those.
Well, we haven't seen Ersin Gulen play. I was actually going to go watch him on Monday night, but he's since handed in his resignation at Whittlesea, so there goes that idea.
Yeah, there you go. But we'll all get to see him soon enough, I think. And for his sake, for Western United's sake and the competition's sake, let's hope he hasn't lost too much in 12 months.
When do you think Mark Rudin might be announced? Coming days?
I think after the A-League Grand Final. From what I can tell, the club doesn't really have any intention to sign it, announce it beforehand. There's no real reason to either, especially with, you know, football fighting for publicity and media space as much as it always does. Like, case in point this week, it's crazy. Like, some of the media space that would usually go to the A-League at this time of year was unfortunately swallowed up by the incredible accomplishments of Liverpool and Spurs in the Champions League. Like, you know, it's an opportunity cost type thing when it comes to football and the media, and there's no point really in Western United adding to that sort of glut by announcing something that they can just hold off on and wait till the season's over and have a little bit of, little bit of limelight of their own, which makes sense. Maybe they want to coincide it with another player signing or two, or maybe a kit reveal as well. Who knows? But, he's definitely their coach.
And Vince, moving on to tonight's clash, a big game for Adelaide United and Perth Glory. What do the Reds have to do to win?
It's a good question. And look, Perth at home are a fantastic team. Basically, they've just got to hang on, be defensively strong, because Perth, with the amount of attacking weapons they have, are going to create chances. They're going to keep coming. There's expectation on them. They'll have a pretty big home crowd behind them as well. It's basically on Adelaide United to show the sort of grit and determination I think they've shown in patches throughout the season, and certainly in the game last week against Melbourne City, is be disciplined and just keep going. They eventually got the better of Melbourne City in the end last weekend, and it'll take a similar sort of performance defensively and going forward for them to beat Perth Glory, but I certainly wouldn't be putting any money on it. I think the Glory will be too good, and the grand final will be at Optus Stadium next weekend, I reckon, which I'm looking forward to. Although, you know, having said that, now that I've made the call, I reckon Adelaide will win now, knowing my luck. But anyway.
Well, it is a weird atmosphere at the moment with Adelaide United, because Marco Kerr's, you know, he's doing pretty well. I think that the fans seem to really get behind his passion and his style. But now we've got, obviously, his contract not being renewed. It looks like Gert-Jan Verbeek, no relation to Pim, is going to be the new coach for next season. So, you know, would the board and the new owners be a little embarrassed if Marco Kurz is actually able to lead this team to a grand final?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a good look for them, particularly. I didn't watch the Melbourne City game last weekend with a granular focus, but I read it in an opinion piece from an advertiser journal, which was really good, that after they scored the goal to basically win the match, Marco Kurz looked back at like the chairman's box and yelled out a profanity, which certainly isn't the first time he's done that this season. So there's clearly weird vibes at a football club at the moment, and I guess that's what you're going to get when you've got an ownership group who are literally mystery men. No one knows who they are, and that, for me, breeds, you know, skepticism and a lack of trust in your supporter base. And when you've got a coach who you've sacked for, you know, presumably reasons that, you know, about their contrasting philosophy in terms of football and what they want to get out of the future and what they sort of want to do with this football club. And you've got a coach who seems to have the players humming and you know, you can't be asking that too much of the new owner. So it's a really, really weird one. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next season, because, you know, it looks like Marco Kurz has built up a really strong team culture. The players love him and that sort of thing. And you'd like to see where he could take it next, but we're not going to get the opportunity, and we're going to have some other bloke come in with a broom, no doubt, and his own ideas, and they'll be starting again. So it's strange, but that's the A-League, baby. Very, very strange competition.
It is a bit strange. We had Michael Moroney on the show last night, and he was saying that it actually came at a good time. So now that the players are actually aware of the situation, they can move forward, and I guess not necessarily the result of tonight's game really rides on Marco Kurz's shoulder in terms of his position.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain freedom that you can attack things when you know that there's big change coming. So I guess the players will attack this game with that freedom, but it's a strange time over there. And once this game's out of the way, then who knows what happens after that. It's a bizarre set of circumstances, which I'm not too sure I've really seen before in the A-League, but there you go. These new owners would hope that the guy that they're bringing in is a better coach than Marco Kurz, because that's the only way he could really justify changing coach at this time.
I wanted to touch on another article written by your Sydney Morning Herald colleague, Vince. Dominic Bossi wrote a piece about government funding for AFL over football. Half the players, twice the funding for the Oval Ball Code. What do you think football needs to do to redress this disparity?
Well, what they're doing now, to be honest, I have to say that there's certainly been a lot more government commitments towards football in the last few weeks and months than there has been in the sort of 15 years before that, stretching back to when Lowy took over. Football's never had a good relationship with government, I don't think, at any time, really. And when Lowy took over, he was, you know, quite often leaning on his own personal contacts throughout government, and there was no cohesive strategy behind the way we spoke to state and federal governments about the infrastructure requirements that we needed. So now that he's gone, we were sort of in no man's land for a little bit, but I do know that SFA have taken the time to figure out how and what they're going to do in this space, and it seems to be coming off. But I guess the only thing is a lot of A-League fans would like to see some money being thrown at top-tier clubs, like seems to be the case for the AFL. And I agree with that as well. There's training, facilities that are needed in certain cities. And one of my pet topics is a new stadium in Brisbane, which I think would be a revolutionary thing for the game to have. But we've also got a lot of need for funding at the grassroots level, and, you know, good fields and lighting and change rooms and those sort of things. We're the most played game in the country, and those things add up very quickly. So, it's the start. We're doing well now. Not as good as the AFL, who are very, very sleek operators in this space. But let's hope the more awareness we have about the disparity in funding sort of turns the dial a little bit our way in the coming years.
And Vince, looking back to the other elimination semi-final, Sydney FC are hosting Melbourne Victory. The Victory didn't take any experienced players to Korea. How much do you think that'll play into their favour this weekend?
I don't know, really, to be honest, because Sydney FC have been back since Thursday morning and left a few of their experienced players at home as well. And the game's not till late tomorrow. So I think Sydney FC will have plenty of time to rest up. And those Victory players have been training, for a large part of the week without Kieran Muscat on deck. So I'm sure everyone at that club is across what they need to do, but I'm not sure either club has a perfect scenario this week, and I don't think one is particularly better than the other, and it's going to come down to, as always with these two clubs, what happens on the day, which no doubt will involve some new level of madness and tomfoolery, and something extraordinary will just happen, as seems to be the case whenever these two teams meet, particularly in the finals. I'm really looking forward to it. Literally anything could happen in this game.
Well, given that, Vince, are you going to give us a prediction?
Absolutely not. No. I already made one on this phone call and I immediately regretted it, so I'm not going to make a second.
Well, Vince, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR. We're looking forward to reading whatever you've got coming for us in the Sydney Morning Herald, and we'll speak to you again soon, I'm sure.
No worry, guys. All the best.
Vince Rigari, Sydney Morning Herald football reporter, joining us on the line, talking all things A-League and Australian football. With that, Louise, I think we'll take a short break. Plenty more still to come, including our own takes on the coming A-League semi-finals and a look at the exciting European football on the weekend, including Premier League race coming down to the wire.